We're talking with Joe McMonagle, author of the Stargate Chronicles, Mind Trek, and other books. And in this segment, in this hour, we're going to talk about remote viewing, how it works, why it works, whether there are any limits to it, places where he can't go, and who else might be out there, because Joe has had some interesting encounters during these episodes, and we'll get into that right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Joe McMonagle, at one point I remember reading that you said something to the effect that remote viewing works because it's sort of like you are transmitting information that's acquired from your own future. Is that still how you see how it works? And share with us why you think it works.
Well, we honestly, we don't really know why it works. One of the possibilities is that in some way we're sending what we know in the future, what we come to know as truth, sending that to ourselves in the past, and that past, future, and present are all kind of a creation of our observations or our how deeply embedded we are in the reality of what's going on. That's one possibility. Another possibility is that when we come into this world or we're born, we arrive with all the information, access to all the information we're ever going to use while we're here, and have already pre-scripted everything that we're about to do, and that this whole thing is an exercise for experience of some kind. There's just lots of theoretic ways that you could look at it, I suppose.
Quantum stuff.
In reality, we just... Pardon?
Quantum theory, quantum mechanics, there's some folks looking at that.
Oh yeah, there's just a lot of different things that people are looking at. But as of right this moment, we really don't have any answers. Some of the things we can say about remote viewing, though, is that there are certain things that affect it mightily. One, for instance, is informational entropy has a great deal to do with the impact of the information on an individual and how much accuracy they might have in the transmission of the, or interpretation of the information they're getting. For instance, higher informational entropy in a target will produce vastly more information. Whether or not it's correct or not is material to how well the person analyzes the material that they're actually getting. There's a lot of very great complexities to it. We know that local sidereal time, the specific place that you're standing in the sidereal clock, has a lot to do with the degree of accuracy or the level of accuracy. That in conjunction with the degree of electromagnetic background noise has a direct effect on remote viewing as well. There's a lot of things that we've come to understand about what makes it better, what makes it worse, that kind of thing, but we still have not come up with an understanding for where the information actually comes from.
Are there rules about this stuff? Are there moral guidelines? For example, could you use it for something that would be universally described as bad? You're going to use remote viewing to find someone so you can kill them.
You know, that's a good question, George, and unfortunately, the answer is it doesn't matter what our value judgment is, whether it's for good, bad, or indifferent. Remote viewing can be pretty much done by any individual walking the planet. What we think, and again, we haven't established this as factual yet, but we have a strong belief that remote viewing is anchored, very well anchored in our survivability, that as a species we have used that sort of instantaneous warning system, or the psychic warning or knowledge of something imminent, something that's about to happen and might hurt us, has become instrumental in our survival as a species. If it wasn't for survival mechanism, being psychic, being the survival mechanism. If it wasn't for that, we wouldn't be here as a species now. And that it's a real stretch when you start using the survival mechanism for a collection of material or a collection of information for some other
Well, I'm sure you've read about accounts of remote viewers who foresaw something like 9/11 coming, and the warnings, no one made sense of them in retrospect. No one paid attention to them. I guess in a lot of ways, the same way our intelligence agencies ignored other kinds of more specific warnings that they got,
That's
right?
right. There are, I know, at least two reports that were filed up to a year prior, talking about the terrorists flying, absconding with airplanes and flying them directly into buildings. And in one case, I know one of those reports actually named one or two of the individuals that actually did fly those airplanes. But in those cases, none of our intelligence agencies were talking to one another because in our society and in our culture, we prize privacy above everything else. So one agency was not, in many cases, allowed to share information with other agencies. And
There was an exercise.
also,
I'm sorry.
and then no one believed them, George. I mean,
Yeah.
if you read a report like that, many years before the event, you would have said, no, that's crazy. Nobody would do that.
I can see people saying, well, why doesn't Joe remote view himself into the future and get the lottery numbers and win a couple million bucks?
Oh, Joe doesn't need to do that. That implies that I'm not rich.
Well, other remote viewers then, if everyone has the ability at some point, you'd think someone would exploit it in that way if it works. That's why I was wondering whether there are rules
Yeah.
about the sort of thing.
Well, first off, if someone has a magic methodology for winning the lottery, and they do, why would they talk about it?
Yeah.
And secondly, why does everyone go to dollars as a means of measuring how rich someone is or how they feel about themselves? That the value in my life comes from what I do. It's not from how much money I have accumulated in a bank account. I have sufficient money to pay my bills, and that's all I worry about in terms of money. I worry more about my value as a human being, and I try to do what I can to help other human beings, and that's more.
What are the limits to it? I know in one exercise that's described in one of your books, you were tasked with going to a location, and it turned out it was Mars, and you encountered some interesting beings, or at least came back with some interesting info. First, maybe describe that experience, and then also, are there places beyond which you can't go?
Well, in the case you brought up, one of the I happened to be at the Monroe Institute at the time, and I was working with Robert Monroe, who was teaching me how to control my out of bodies. At the time, the military felt that some of the techniques and methodologies he had could do a number of different things. One was improve my remote viewing beyond what it was. Secondly, was to help me deal with the cool down periods between my remote viewings, which are becoming more and more extended. And that was basically because of stress. And third, to conquer my ability to control my out of body so that I could use the out of body state as a targeting methodology as well. And during that period of time, they would drop in with informal targets to test the veracity of what we were doing in the lab together. And that happened to be one of the targets. And, so it started out with me being in the sort of shielded cage, and Bob Monroe asking me to go to specific locations. And he at the time was giving me GPS locations. I thought the GPS locations referred only to the Earth. I didn't know at the time that, or I had not assumed at the time that all the planets in our solar system had their own GPS systems. And he was basically giving me seven locations by GPS, and I was reporting on what I was seeing there. What's interesting is every location he gave me, I basically described in detail what you can actually see with a telescope on Mars. And that included some what appear to be pyramids and structures with right angled walls and things. And it turns out that JPL in California refers to this entire area as the ruins or the ruined city of Mars. describe many of those things in the location, identical to the photographs that were represented by the GPS locations.
You were inside of them. They were struck. They weren't just looked like pyramids. They were pyramids, right?
Right, exactly. In one case, thought that I was working on a new discovery because the pyramid was so large. You could, I think, fit five pyramids of Giza inside one of those pyramids on Mars. And I was inside the pyramid seeing some very large rooms and made comment about this must be a brand new discovery. I don't remember seeing anything like this. And I think at the same time I was saying something like, the sun looks really weird to me. And it turned out that it was weird because I was looking at the sun from Mars. But there's been a lot of comments made about this. And one of the things I need to stress here, George, is that neither Bob Monroe nor I knew what the target was. It was in a sealed envelope. All he had was a card going with that envelope that had the GPS locations on it. And the actual target was Mars 1 million years BC.
Huh. And there were people there.
Yeah. My sense was that there was the remnants of a civilization that had been forced to move because the planet's atmosphere was deteriorating and there were some significant climatic changes taking place that would no longer support life, and that many of these structures were built as hibernation chambers or chambers from which they could possibly pass on information to those who might follow.
So you have to wonder if they're still there.
Well, I think they are, personally. Does that make a difference to anyone? I don't know. I know JPL has an interest in it because they keep it in a top drawer file. And they keep all of those GPS locations together, along with the photographs. So, and they refer to it as the lost city on Mars or the ruined city on Mars themselves. So, there must be some interest in it from others within NASA. I hope one day that we'll put a lander there or somebody there to check it out.
Well, me too. I hope it happens in my lifetime. They're taking their time. Tell me this: what are your general thoughts on what else is out there? It seems to me I remember reading some other encounters you had with some kind of an intelligence out there that wasn't happy that you were floating around spying on them.
Well, it's kind of interesting. I get all of my targets I do are double bind or triple bind. They're in sealed envelopes. I have no way of knowing what it is I'm working on other than being psychic. That's the difference between remote viewing and being a normal psychic. Is remote viewing, you have to guarantee that anyone working with the remote viewer working on the target has to be at least double blind and not know what they're working on. In the case of one of those targets, I got a very simple response informationally, which was basically, I don't know if you remember in the old hippie days, the circle with the Y in the center, sort of
peace sign. Symbol. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you were to remove the circle and just keep that peace sign, the Y, that's what I kept getting as a symbol. And I kept drawing that. And I could not get past the idea of the symbol for literally months. And I finally had an epiphany one day when I was sitting at my desk looking at it for the 100th time, and I realized what I was actually looking at was the inside or the outside corner of an empty box, and that told me something about the target being probably some intelligence of some kind that was able to either block or override my remote viewing ability. When I came to that conclusion, I then started getting stacks of boxes, and from that point on, whenever I got that target as a double-blind target, I always would get images of boxes. But once in a while, when I first start targeting that particular target, I will get a fragment of an image or something that tells me that these are intelligent. This is an intelligent species of some kind. I have no idea where they're from, who they are. I just know that they're somewhat humanoid, and have an interest in us, and they're fully capable of blocking psychic functioning or remote viewing.
In that sense, then, more advanced, at least more advanced than most of us.
Well, yeah, advanced in the sense that they understand remote viewing anyway and are able to block it. And it may be that they may not be as advanced in some areas as we are, and it may be why they have an interest in us. I don't know.
Have you formed an opinion about how much other intelligence might be out there, or whether it's out there or whether it's here? Is it strictly aliens, extraterrestrials, interdimensionals, anything like that?
I agree with what Carl Sagan said once. He, you know, he struck a match and he said, this represents the entire span of an intelligent species, from the flash of the match, which is the birth of life, to the extinguishing of the match, which is the death of life. And that represents the million years, perhaps, of an intelligent species existence. And he said, with all of these matches going off across the cosmos, the probability of two matches going off side by side is very remote. But the part he left out, the part he unfortunately was not able to say or was not part of his statement at the time, is that if we ever solve the problem of star-to-star travel, by inference, we will have had to have created a time machine. Because if we're going to travel faster than the speed of light, we, in essence, are going to violate time. And that being true, all the matches will flash simultaneously then, or we can be in a space where they happen to flash simultaneously. So all life can be connected in some way or shape or form. And so I think that the cosmos is rife with life. We will eventually figure out a way of jumping star to star instantaneously. And that when we do, we will open the door to a multitude of living entities across the cosmos.
Any idea if those entities are here, whether we, you know, a lot of speculation about whether we exist within a larger civilization that we don't really see, that we can't quite comprehend?
Again, if you can release your need to have a belief one way or the other and just look at the raw data, the data that implies visitation by other entities, I think there's way, way far away enough data to imply that we're being visited by, if not one species, certainly a few species, and that that's been going on for thousands of years, and they have some interest in us as a species, as an intelligent species. So, I think they're here. They've been here a long time, and they certainly don't want to go out of their way to communicate with us because, for obvious reasons, we're probably pretty primitive in their eyes.
So the ones who are blocking you with those boxes, it's not necessarily hostility. It's just they didn't really want to be discovered or didn't want to have a dialogue, not yet anyway.
Right, and it may be that I'm not supposed to have any insight. Any insight I might have might be something I can't deal with, or it might be something I wouldn't understand anyway. It's kind of like you don't give a loaded gun to a child. That kind of thing. But it could also be that there is some hostility for some reason. I don't know. I've never felt any direct hostility. If anything, any harm that's been done to human beings by other entities, I have a sense it's done out of ignorance. Kind of like we would trap a moth with a jar,
right,
to watch the moth and study the moth. That's got to be a very uncomfortable situation for the moth.
We're talking with Joe McMonagle, remote viewer, psychic spy, and in addition to encountering other intelligences, he's had some experiences that have changed his spiritual view of pretty much everything. We'll get into that when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. So if you had the abilities that Joe McMonagle has, the ability to project your consciousness through space, through time, to witness, for example, historical events, what would you do? How would you use it? Would you go to Roswell and see what crashed? Would you put yourself in Dallas in November 1963 and see what happened, what went down? I can imagine all sorts of exercises, just not sure how well it works. And when we come back, I'll ask Joe if he's taken a look at any of that stuff, as well as whether or not remote viewing is dangerous once you're out there, whether you're at risk. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. Joe McMonagle, you were describing how remote viewing works. So it's a double blind. There's some kind of a clue hidden in an envelope. You don't get to see it. The guy asking you questions doesn't get to see it. Can you assign yourself something, though? For example, Roswell. Could you say, I want to see what crashed at Roswell, and then remote view yourself to that location at the key date in 1947?
No, you can't. If you're a remote viewer, you can't assign any kind of a target to yourself. You have to trust that someone's going to eventually give it to you if you have an interest in it.
Did you ever get that one?
Yeah, I did. And I believe that there's nothing that happened at Roswell, personally. I think the true crash site is Saguaro, New Mexico, and that whenever Saguaro, New Mexico is brought up, there seems to be a big flurry of information that suddenly hits the papers and the news on Roswell. It's almost as though it's a distraction from the real crash site. But that's my personal belief. I think that there was a two-vehicle crash in Socorro, New Mexico, and that is the area that they're trying to dissuade us from having an interest in.
Huh.
I think there was an event at Roswell, but it wasn't a crash of a saucer or anything like that.
You ever get asked to look at John F. Kennedy's assassination?
Oh, yeah. And I think there was a lot of specific reasons for it. I think that it has more to do with the Cuban Missile Crisis than anything else. I think President Kennedy was in a lot of pain, usually, and was receiving a great deal of treatment for the pain, which included, to a large extent, injections of drugs that normally aren't given in excess because of the effects they have on the psychology of the individual. And that this became evident during the Cuban Missile Crisis and frightened some people in the cabinet, and that as a result, he was assassinated. But these are all just conjectures based on just my own personal view from information that I was able to obtain using.
Meaning, I mean, did you project yourself to Dallas on that day and look around?
Yeah, there just simply was no way that there was a single shooter in that. In that assassination, there had to be multiple shooters in that event, and the use of the Italian weapon was most assuredly beyond comprehension. I mean, if anybody's ever seen this particular kind of gun or operated it, it's impossible to use it with the accuracy and the capability that Oswald supposedly used it with. It's a very inaccurate weapon. It's very hard to handle and manipulate. And the fact that he got so many rounds off in such a short period of time and apparently hit with every single round is ridiculous. So there was more than one shooter. The fact that the case is closed, it was a single shooter considered to be Oswald rather. Lends me to believe that there had to be some form of cover-up. I think it was more an issue of solve the problem and get back to business as usual, so there's no panic in the American public, that kind of thing.
We had a guest a couple of months ago, Bill Burns, who wrote a book about President Kennedy receiving, interestingly enough, receiving these injections sort of under the table of drugs that really messed up his judgment, perfectly consistent with what you were just telling me there. I'll have to send you that book.
That's interesting because the my view of the doctor that was supposedly treating him is that the guy wasn't a doctor at all, that it was someone who had access to drugs that do in a sense create forms of psychosis when they're used to extremes or excess.
I'm gonna have to get you this book. I'm gonna have to get you
Yeah,
this book.
I like to read it. That'd be
I'm going to ask you this. I don't know if you can answer it. If you can't, I understand, because it might be proprietary information. But I was told that you took a look at a certain ranch in Utah that I've written about, and with Dr. Colm Kelleher, a site of a lot of really weird stuff. And I know that you do, you do these services sometimes for a client, and maybe you can't talk about it. But if you can talk about that one, if you remember it, what can you tell us?
I think I know the ranch you're talking about. That particular ranch does have a lot of very strange and anomalous things going on. I'm not sure I would agree entirely with some of the things that people believe about it. But I do know that if you were to visit the ranch or stay on the ranch for any lengthy period of time, you would probably observe some of those interesting anomalies. I think the anomalies have a lot to do with individuals that seem to appear and disappear, with events surrounding damage to some of the animals,
Yeah.
Energy confluence, what I call a confluence of energy, perhaps seeing bright lights coming out of the ground, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
All of those things, in my opinion, I think, lend themselves to sort of a blending of multiple universes, or not universes, but different
Dimensions? Yeah.
dimensional effects, things happening that cross dimensional boundaries or boundary lines, that kind of thing.
Well, our mutual friends who had studied it for a long time, that's sort of the conclusion they came to. And there are no conclusions, no, certainly no hard and fast conclusions. I've been there a
No,
dozen
no.
times and stayed on the property. I never got to see anything, but most people who go there do see stuff, or at least they used
Yeah,
to.
and the I think you in many cases, one of the things that happens is when you go with an expectation of having some kind of an experience, it almost always winds up that you're there when there's nothing happening. If you, however, if you go to a place with no specific expectation, just with an open mind, and say, well, I'll just observe and collect information on whatever might happen. In many cases, there will be things that will happen. It's almost as though your intentions drive whatever the outcome might be. And if the intention is too strong an intention for an event, it's almost thwarted from the outset.
Tell me this,
It's
is it
sort of a
dangerous? Is it dangerous for you
no,
when you're out there extending yourself, sort of in a vulnerable? No?
I've never felt threatened in any way, and I think this has a lot to do with my near-death experience. As a result of my near-death experience, I've pretty much lost my fear of death and dying, and I realized that in the dying or death process, the transitional process, that while we may not be human anymore, we certainly retain some form of identity. At least it's consistent with our identity. So I've never had any fear of anything as a result of that. I have more of a burning interest or a real desire to sort of follow something when it happens, to see why it's happening or what the root cause might be. And so I would probably walk into things that might be weird versus run away from them.
You had a real spiritual awakening over on that side, and as you already told us earlier, it was you wanted to stay for a while. At one point, somebody over there told you can't stay, you got to go back. And you're thinking to
Right.
yourself, well, this seems so mundane compared to what's over there, but you also came to the conclusion, I forget in which of your books you said that life on this plane of existence is very important, that what we do here is really important in the long run.
Exactly. Well, I need to add to the near-death experience. In 1984, I retired from the military, and 7 months later, somewhere between 6 and 8 months later, I had a massive coronary. And before I could get to the hospital, my wife was driving me there. I died in basically died in the front seat of the car. And I didn't have any vent then. I next thing I knew, I was awakened, and there was a guy standing over me with the paddles in his hand saying, "Welcome back." And I wound up spending 10 days in the country hospital that she had taken me to, and trying to stabilize my heart so they could move me to the university hospital for open heart surgery. Eventually, they successfully did that. I had my open heart surgery, and it was during the open heart surgery that I had the additional experience. And during that experience, I tried to go from where I was in the operating center to the light again, and I was not permitted to do that. And the entity that did not permit me to do that was what I believe Bob Monroe refers to in his books, Journey Out of the Body, as a silver entity or an inspect, an intelligent species. And every time I tried to go to the light, this intelligent species entity would stop me and say, "No, you can't go there." And but so I was allowed to see the light from a distance. The problem it created for me is I've always felt the light was God. But in seeing the light from a distance, I could see that it had edges, or it was a finite light in to some respect. And God, as I understand God to be in my definition, is an unlimited being, so it can't have edges. And this confused me, created a huge philosophic problem for me, which I spent probably 2 years trying to figure out. And the conclusion I came to is what I think the light might be is the totality of what we are once we make a transition of death. We become whole again. All what constitutes all of what we are as an entity comes together, and we're whole and complete again. And it's such a unique and overwhelming feeling of comfort that we equate it to God, because it's the only thing that we can figure it must be. But this has a huge impact on me, because it says that no matter how much we envision what God might or might not be, it's impossible for us as earthbound entities to know God. We can only know what God has given us insight to, and that's being human. Humans are created in the image of what our Creator may be. So it says to me that we need to spend more time understanding what our responsibilities and our morality is as humans, and what we need to be doing for one another, and not so much time trying to invent or create a designer God to worship. In other words, we need, through our actions, to worship God in the way that He's designed us to be.
And
I don't have any answers.
Well, I mean, back to how I worked my way into this question was about life on this plane, you know, it being important what we do here, sort of like karma, I guess, that,
exactly.
You know.
Exactly. And this plane's important because this is the place we have experience. This is the place where we learn things and we come to understand things. And so I think there's certain things that we have that are a job here. And if we ignore those requirements, then we're doomed to repeat the lifetime until we are able to finally address the things properly that we were put here to address. In other words, learn the answers to the questions that we don't even know yet.
Well, it sounds pretty close to reincarnation then.
Well, I don't believe in reincarnation. Physicists say everything is. Everything exists from the beginning of time to the end of time. Everything just is. And we are kind of the ultimate creators of time, who, by observation, create this sort of linear path that is a sense of time or a sense of being. And I kind of buy that, and that means that incarnations all simultaneously. So while I don't buy into reincarnation, I certainly accept the fact that we probably are living a multitude of incarnations simultaneously.
Some of the things that you wrote talk about consciousness. Your concept of consciousness and reality itself are so much different than before the near-death experience and some of the other experiences that followed. The idea that reality isn't what it seems to be, that what we see around us is just sort of a preconceived agreement that we've reached inside our brains or our souls or something. Okay, this is a rock and this is a house, but this may or may not be what things really look like.
Exactly. There's even evidence, there's now neurological evidence that 10 people standing in the same room together, when they see something, do not all see the same thing. We all see things massaged by our experiences, by what we believe is true versus what we don't want to see. We subtract and add things from the vision. And the very basic elements of that envisionment of what reality might be is different from one individual to the next, even to the point that we will not necessarily agree on color. So the worst possible thing you can do probably is accept the word of an eyewitness because of that. But that's what we give the highest credibility to is our vision, the things we see. And all our vision actually is the translation of photons bouncing off the rods and cones of the eye, and our eyes and what our brain tells us we might be seeing. So it's not unusual for two people to witness something and one see it happen and one never see anything happen at all because of fear or innate fear they might carry.
Pretty hard to get your head around this stuff, though, and to explain it to people, I would imagine.
Yeah, there's actually some really good films on the internet. There's the gorilla and the basketball team film, which is very very self-explanatory. But there's lots of demonstration films on the internet where people are actually shown things that they never see. And they actually believe that somebody has changed the film when the film is played back, and they're asked to specifically look for the thing that they missed. And they think that they're being fooled or lied to. But we're all fallible. We're not machines. We're an interesting biologic system that's tied into a reality that we all kind of co-create. And it's changing constantly in terms of its content. And we'll accept certain things, and there's certain things we won't accept, which is why I give great leniency towards the honest skeptics who have difficulty accepting or not accept, don't accept certain things about how I believe or other people believe things are.
Well, it also delves into, if a tree falls in the forest, does it make a sound? And the discussion of matter being affected just by the fact that we observe it, even matter a long ways away.
How we even feel about it. I mean, who says that matter itself doesn't have intelligence?
Well, I remember seeing something you wrote about a rock. Maybe we'll get into that on the other side of this break here. I still want to talk to Joe McMonagle about the Monroe Institute, the work he does to train people to become remote viewers. If you're interested in learning if you have these abilities, I guess we all have it to some extent.